Hello everyone and welcome to VOK's podcast on Netflix's Glow. So all of the gorgeous ladies of VOK are gathering together to talk about the amazing gorgeous ladies of wrestling. I think we've all loved this show and we're really excited to talk about it. Today I'm joined by Michal.
Hi, I'm Inkaz Rain on the podcast of Ice and Fire Forums.
Mary.
Hi everyone, it's Naimira on the forums.
And Dana.
Tane Dana on the forums.
Okay, so this episode will contain spoilers for all 10 episodes of the first season of Glow, which reminds me that this show has been renewed for a second season, which is great news.
Yay!
Yeah. Okay, so we can just start with our ratings, which we still haven't decided what we're going to do. I don't know. We can do body slams or
body
something.
Body slams?
Yeah,
oh, exactly. Wait. Robots. Robots, guys.
Oh, those drug supplying robots?
Yes.
Okay, we can do that.
Did it have a name? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But you can go first, Michal.
Googling.
I think it has a name.
Okay. I would give 4.5, I think, drug supplying robots. It's a really good show. And it kind of feels like a breath of fresh air because, you know, so much of what I watch is deeply emotional and really, like high stakes and just stressful. And this, while it's very emotionally involving and very strong, never, like, made me, like, freak out. You know, I didn't lose sleep over it, which is a nice change.
Yeah.
And it was, like, really feminist and inclusive. And, I mean, I think they could have, like, they could have done some more with the inclusiveness, but hopefully they'll do that in the second season. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it, and I was kind of skeptical because I don't really, I went off of Orange is the New Black. It got weird, whatever for me, and I was kind of like, oh, maybe this is just like another kind of outrageous, gross show, and I don't know anything about wrestling. But no, it's really, really good.
I would give it a 4. Drug, drug-providing robots, because, well, I started watching mostly because you girls were so excited about it. I don't really know, like, I really enjoyed it. I really, after each episode, I just couldn't stop from watching the next one. Like, I really binge-watched it, but I cannot really point out why I enjoyed it so much, and some things made me just a little bit uncomfortable. I wasn't sure what the message was, or so I don't know. I really enjoyed it, but I'm not sure exactly why and what it did to me. Like, it was intense, but at the same time so surreal that I don't know.
Dana?
I gave it 4.5. Robots with a secret drug stash. I loved it. I watched wrestling when I was a kid, and this made me want to start watching wrestling again, which is, I never thought I would think that, ever.
I know, right?
I just really loved the characters and the drama, and I liked that every single character was their own well-thought-out person enough. Some of the more secondary characters, hopefully we'll get into them in the second season, and I love that. Oh, I've forgotten his real name, but Piz from Veronica Mars was back. I was like, yay! He works so well in this 1980s producer, rich kid role, and I really enjoyed him in it, and as well as everyone else. It's just a little teenage crush got to come back. I'm okay.
Yeah, I'd also give it like 4.5 lemon cakes. Oh, lemon cakes. I'm so used to giving lemon cakes. I totally meant drug providing robots. So anyway, I give it 4.5 robots. I really loved it. I thought there was a lot of stuff in there that I could relate to. Having so many women in one show, there was a lot that I could just, you know, relate to basically. And there were lots of really real feminist moments, which were amazing. But we'll get into that. Okay, so you guys want to move on to who your favorite characters were, or your favorite moment, or just something that really hit you?
Well, I think my favorite character was... Oh my god, I can't remember her name. Betty Gilpin's character. The friend.
Debbie? Egan?
The ex-friend. Debbie. I watched this a couple of... end of June, I think I watched it, with my sister, and highly recommend watching it with another woman if you can, because it's awesome. But yeah, I love Debbie. I mean, she's not the type of character that I would usually, like, go for in a story like this. Like, I'm usually more rooting for, like, you know, the less obvious beauty who, whatever, but, like, right from the start, you can tell that she's smart and like kind, and you know, but she still has this incredibly strong personality, and I think the way the show plays with that is really, really interesting. But I also think the actress is just amazing. Like, she's on American Gods, which is the first time I saw her, and she is like, there's a lot of big actors on that show, and she steals the spotlight like right out from under them. So I was really, really a big fan of hers. The poor girl who had to play a terrorist.
Oh, the poor Indian girl who had to play an Arab terrorist.
Yes!
That was
awful.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't even Arabic. It was mean. I mean, not that all Arabs are terrorists.
It was so instructive of like the times, but yeah.
Yeah. What you said about Debbie, I don't think she was... I think the actress is amazing. I think she kills it in that role. But I think she wasn't particularly kind. Like, she took... she basically took the Liberty Bell character from another of the wrestlers just because she thought it was the better one, and she used her influence over the director to get that role. And she didn't care what happened to...
It's definitely... Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, an intermittent kind of kindness. Like, she's, I mean, when I say kind, I guess I mean, like, she's very supportive of Ruth at first, you know, before she knows that she's been cheating on her husband. You know, I think, like, she's a good friend in that way. I definitely agree there's a lot of, like, selfish and self-serving behavior that she exhibits. And I think that just makes her more interesting because, like...
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything, like, evil, you know, but, like, stuff that you're like, oh, that's not the nicest thing to do, you know. But then you kind of understand because she's in such a crappy place personally, and, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, it just makes her a more real character. Being kind all the time, because that's not very realistic, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, not universally kind by any means.
Yeah. Okay, what about you, Mary?
Well, I felt really connected to Ruth, actually. I love Alison Brie, first of all, so I was really, really invested in her storyline, and I loved her connection with Debbie and their whole relationship and the way they kind of reconnect through wrestling without really, I mean, on Debbie's side, she doesn't really want to reconnect, but they share this... great link, and that was nice to watch. And other than that, I mean, the whole crew is just crazy. I love them all. They all have something that's really touching and interesting in them.
And Dana?
I don't think I could choose like a favorite character. I have a massive soft spot for Brittany Young, who plays Carmen or Machu Picchu on there. I love the story with her family, and absolutely just thought that just the way that she acted was brilliant. But I do have a favorite moment, which is a bit weird. Are we only doing characters or moments?
You can do both.
Okay. I really, really loved the scene where Ruth has to take the pregnancy test, and it's just it's always just, you know, you can pee on a stick now, but it just shows what it was like in the early 80s.
She's doing science!
Yeah, exactly. In what is just, like, already a very, very stressful time, like, pregnancy test, terrifying, results and all that kind of thing, having to do a science experiment with your underpants around your ankles is just hilarious, and I just thought it was very funny. I really like that part.
And how long did it take to cook? Like... a really long time.
About 10 minutes, I think it was. Like, she timed it, and then you have to add things, and then time it again. It was, yeah.
It was very crazy. Complicated. Hi, Adam.
Hey, everybody.
So, would you like to give us your ratings? How many drug-toting robots?
For the whole season?
Yeah. How many drug-providing robots are you going to give this? And your favorite character slash favorite moment?
I definitely give it, like, 5 crack-addicted wrestlers. I really enjoyed this season. Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't expecting much, but, like, I thought that it got stronger as it went. The first couple episodes were a little slow. And, I don't know, a favorite moment. Ooh. Pretty much anything when they were actually, like, in character. Like, the whole, like, U.S.-Russia stuff was just ridiculously good.
Yeah, mine was definitely Carmen Wade, Machu Picchu. I loved her. She was so sweet and innocent, and yet she was the only one who actually knew anything about wrestling. And then when she had that panic attack, she was amazing in the role. And the moment that resonated the most with me was when the Welfare Queen, she was having second thoughts about her character. She was like, what is my son going to think when he sees me in this character? And that just, as a parent, that's when you're making a major life decision, that's what you're thinking. How are your kids gonna, you know, how is this going to influence your kids? And that just kind of hit hard, you know. And she was, because she was playing a kind of a negative, like, not exactly a negative character.
Oh, no, super, 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 super negative.
Yeah,
the most
bad stereotype.
Yes, and she was like worried because that was not the person that she was in real life. So she was like, what is my son going to think of this? And that just,
her son?
Yeah,
she's,
I mean,
into
who
Stanford.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
But it's like in the finale, I think it was just rang so true when, I forget what her stage name is, like, what did they call her? Like, Tehran or something? Or, you know, she was just like, they hate me. Like, they actually hated me. Like, she was out there playing this, like, terrorist character. She's like, no, all the people, like, they were throwing stuff. Like, it just kind of hit her. And it kind of, you know, I thought that was a nice little moment to, you know, realize, like, yeah, these wrestling characters are kind of, like, really shitty stereotypes. They're actually just people.
Yeah,
I mean, I just wanted to say I loved Carmen. She was amazing and so sweet, and I loved how, you know, like, when you see a character of a certain size on television, a lot of the time you expect them to be treated in a certain way, and Carmen was absolutely not. Like, it was totally clear that she was, like, a fully fleshed out character and super sweet and, like, you know, had a lot of layers to her, and I love that. But I mean, I'm still a little bit ambivalent about the whole, like, the stereotypes thing, like, because obviously it is supposed to be so 80s, but, like, they don't fully challenge it, you know? Like, they have that moment where, you know, she's, like, really upset because people threw cans at her in the ring and you know, made her bleed, and you have the Welfare Queen, like, grappling with it, but they kind of don't, like, fix it, you know, and that's okay, that's a choice, but, like, I'm kind of wondering where they're gonna go with that in the future, like, because it is the 80s, but at the same time, we're watching this in, you know,
yeah.
2017.
It seems like the women themselves realize, like, this is super offensive and terrible, because, like, you know, and, like, everything they came up with was either, you know, female stereotypes or gender racial stereotypes. But, like, the guys are like, yeah, but it's what people want. It's cool. They sort of like, yeah, it's not cool, but they just gloss over it, which I guess is kind of the way a lot of people thought.
Well, they did kind of try to fight back against it, where they did the whole KKK thing. I think that was kind of reacting to that, but they just kind of went to the other extreme.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
And they were like, we can't show that. We can show junk chain, but we can't show the Klan getting beat down.
There is a 2012 documentary by Brett Whitcomb, and he interviews a lot of these women who were involved in the first couple of seasons, because it only had 4 seasons, the actual gorgeous ladies of wrestling, and it's really interesting to hear these women interviewed, because they didn't challenge it at the time, and they don't really challenge it now either. They talk about how political it was, you know, they talked about stuff that was happening in the Middle East and had characters, and obviously they had a Russian stereotype on there and a Middle Eastern stereotype on there. But even now, they don't look upon it in the way that we would now, because once again they were involved as well, and they loved the women that they got to wrestle against, so they just see, I guess, the fan enjoyment and their own enjoyment in it without looking at it as critically, I guess, as we do now in our time and current situation.
Yeah, even when you look at wrestling now, I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, but I think they still have these very exaggerated, very stereotyped characters. But they still get huge audiences. Obviously people still want to watch that kind of thing.
Yeah, what's with that?
I don't know.
Like, when I was watching wrestling, you had Booker T, and I didn't know at the time, but, you know, his character's name's after Booker T. Washington, who was a massive civil rights leader in the decades after the Civil War and into the early 1900s. And it's so bizarre that you would have something so campy named after such an important man.
Yeah, so, like, personally, knowing absolutely nothing about wrestling, it was very funny to me to see how they, like, I didn't actually know that it was scripted or, like, there were storylines or whatever when I went into watching this, so I was very...
Wow!
I was kind of... I mean, I knew, like, I had a tiny inkling. What?
So you're telling me you thought that the Hulk and they really would steal each other's women?
I didn't know that they did that. I thought that wrestling was like two people get into a ring and maybe they have characters for like excitement purposes, but then they just fight and have a match and then it's over.
It's like an actual college wrestling match.
Yes, I didn't realize that it was like entertainment.
Like the moves
in
are
that
scripted
way.
And everything. Yeah, yeah. The winners decided well beforehand.
Yeah,
I'm completely with you, Michal. I didn't have a clue.
I never knew about this. So that was really interesting for me to kind of like to see that, like, the degree of creativity, I guess, that went into it. You know, that was interesting too. And I mean, it's funny that I don't have as much of a negative reaction to, like, Zoya the Destroyer, you know, as I do to, like, the Welfare Queen, even though that's obviously also a pretty awful stereotype, you know. But...
Yeah, but the Russians were great villains in the 80s, you know what I mean?
That's specifically dated, you know, it was like Cold War, you know, where as opposed to, like, we still think black people are scamming the system, so, you know.
Yeah, and I think the Dollop, I think, actually did a real good episode on, like, the whole Welfare Queen myth. It's very interesting.
Hmm.
There's, like, one lady who was basically just, like, a sociopath. And just, like it was more than just, like, the system. Like, she, like, had different names and all kinds of stuff.
See, the whole stereotypes thing is what actually made me a little bit uncomfortable, because... Yeah, it's exactly the point where she's worried about what her son is gonna think. It was so uncomfortable to watch stereotypes like that, and the poor Indian girl who has to play a terrorist. It's just awful, and they're all like that. They're all awful stereotypes, and I wasn't sure what I thought about the show portraying that, even though it's clearly meant to criticize that. So it's, yeah, I still haven't made up my mind, obviously.
I think the fact that you are uncomfortable seeing it makes you uncomfortable, and that's kind of what they're going for, shows how far we've come. Because, I mean, time was not that long ago, and I mean, in some places it still is a bit, but in Hollywood, they just cast stereotypes, you know? Yeah. And that's just what they've done for decades and decades, and not even necessarily overtly or super offensive, but still, like, it's we're sort of just now kind of getting over that, I think. And we realize that, you know, hey, everyone can kind of do everything. It's okay. You know, we're still not quite there yet, but the fact that us as an audience can realize, like, you know, if we saw that again today, you'd be like, oh, that's super uncomfortable, right? Like, it wouldn't fly as well.
Yeah, I think the one of another great scene was I think in the very first episode where Ruth goes for an audition and she just reads out the wrong part. Like, she reads out the man's part, and when the director, I think, he says that, you know, I know you did it intentionally, and she says, yeah, I just read out the better part. And you can just sense how frustrating it is for women at the time that all the roles that are available are like secretaries and, you know, wives and stuff, and there's no, there are no like real characters that a woman can play. I mean, they might, even if there are, they're like few and far between. I think for living in Pakistan, I think it's very true for women who are actors. I think it's still very difficult for them to come by those roles because, again, all of the roles in television are defined by whether this woman is who this woman is married to or whose daughter she is, or it's always in relation to a man. It's not a character in itself. So I think I could definitely like relate to that too.
Well, I mean, I think that's something that makes Glow so interesting, because it functions as a story about women who are making art, entertainment for a man who is making it for men, and there's a definitively sexual like tardiness and like, you know, watch girls fighting and, you know, blah 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 to it. But the show itself, I mean, I'm sure I've spoken to guys who like it, obviously Adam, you like it, but I feel like it is very kind of female focused, the story, you know, like it's majority female characters, you know, so it's a very interesting hybrid in that way, that like we're not only we're seeing the kind of sexism that is both like crazy obvious but also much more modern, like you mentioned, Adam, than like, you know, I don't know, something set in, you know, 1903, and it's like, women can't vote, they have menstrual cycles, you know, like something like that. So like, I think that's definitely an asset of the show, that it does play with those, with like dual perceptions in that way.
This was also at the time, like, women can't do sports, they have menstrual cycles, they should do things like gymnastics and swimming and not shot put or javelin or field hockey or soccer or gridiron, because they can't do that. They definitely shouldn't do rugby. And it's a period of time where it's that same kind of sexism just applied to a different facet of life. I think I was incredibly lucky that growing up, my dad's favorite action hero was Sigourney Weaver in Alien. And I thought that was a norm, and it wasn't until I was in my late teens, after growing up with Xena or a princess and all that kind of thing, I got to realize, oh wait, not everyone is as lucky as I am. Not everyone's got to see women in really good roles. I was just really lucky that my dad is a massive Alien fan, that I thought women superheroes were the norm. And yeah, it's bizarre that back then, like, women wrestling, so strange and weird. And in the documentary, they mention, as they put it, but to get people in the door, you'd have either midgets or women wrestling, and they say it like that, and you're just like, holy shit, that's, women wrestling is, you're putting it in the same kind of thing.
Like a
sideshow, like, it's exploitation.
Yeah, and more like a gag, like, than, you know, actual real wrestling, right?
Yeah, it's like who you use to warm up for the main guy.
Yeah, have a laugh at these women try and be men, do men things. Ha ha ha, let's watch them change a light bulb next. Ha!
Although at one point all of their periods did cycle together.
Yeah.
And I had to leave the room.
I was just gonna mention that. the tampon scene in the locker room, that was so amazing. It was so real, right? I mean, just sharing tampons. That was basically the point of the whole scene.
we see like the boys' locker room portrayed a lot in film and in various media, and sometimes like not accurately. But like you don't get a lot of the girls' locker room sort of like whatever goes on in there. I don't know, outside of like, hey, are you going out with Bobby this weekend? Or you know, like there's not a lot of like passing around tampons and whatever else.
Yeah, which is sort of just refreshing, right?
Than it is that scene. When you see women's locker room scenes, it's a lot more like Porky's. It's a early 80s comedy, and they have a peephole to look into the girls' locker room, and it's essentially...
And they're posing provocatively for no one but the camera.
Exactly, steamy showers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If there was clothes there, they would...
I mean, you know, if I'm making a movie as a guy, that's how I imagine the women's locker room is all the time. But... Obviously, that's probably not accurate.
Yeah. In high school, women's, like, the girls' locker room was essentially dirty with lip gloss because people decided to kiss the walls, and occasionally some dirty person would leave a used sanitary napkin on the wall.
Why would you kiss the wall?
Why would you use a used sanitary napkin and stick it to the wall? I don't know. Girls are just as gross as boys.
It was even a strong feminist statement. Sometimes.
Yeah, see, I'm grossed out by that, and I spent most of the day with my hands inside someone's belly, so.
Yeah. That's gross. No, but I do agree. I think it was really, I like the aspect of it that, like, you know, it was also a really interesting thing to see the mix of women who were, like, you know, some of them were, like, athletes, some of them were, like, actresses, and, like, the things that brought them together to this particular job, you know, that they, I think, knew wasn't going to, you know, get them any awards won or anything like that. It was really interesting, you know, and people like Machu Picchu who just really wanted to do this with her for her career. So I really enjoyed seeing that. And I think that affected the dynamics that we get of them, you know, throughout the series, like in the locker room, but also, you know, with I can only remember their stage names, but like Britannica being jealous of Ruth because she gets along with what's his face, Mark Maron, you know.
Mark Maron was awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
he was.
Like he was kind of despicable sometimes, but he like the whole season he was just killing me.
Yeah, don't know if I like him, but yeah.
Oh, that last scene with him.
I mean, he did
try
to make out with his daughter.
Yeah,
so.
That was so creepy.
Awful.
He didn't know.
Well, he didn't know. How do you live with yourself after doing that? Like, even if you didn't know.
I mean, but she was still young enough to be his daughter, obviously, so it was still gross either way.
Well,
but...
yeah, well they made it super gross because he was like, are you 18? You know what? I don't even care. Like, I'm so drunk. And then she's like, oh, no, I'm your daughter. It's way worse. And he's just like, oh, I'm going to throw up my mouth right now. All right.
Yeah, they fooled me. I totally thought she was in love with him. I was.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I didn't know. I had no idea that was coming. I was like, what the hell? And then, like, she's like, oh, I don't even care about wrestling. I'm like, I just wanted to hang out. And he's like, that's kind of, you could have just introduced yourself. Like, it's a little crazy. A little bit much. I tried to sleep with you. Like, you realize maybe your plan could have been thought through.
Yeah. And I guess his girlfriend had, like, Britannica had some influence in that, right? Where she tried to convince him that she had Janine had a crush on him. And that was probably...
the camera thing or whatever.
Yeah. That she was basically jealous of her... So that was probably playing in his mind, right? Which is why he made that decision. Yeah. But it's still super awkward.
Oh yeah, watch a show where incest is normal.
That's right. We're
yeah, but they know they're related, though. Which, in a weird way, makes it better.
Yeah, the accidental incest is a little different.
Yeah. At least know what you're getting into.
I think it's weird, like, I mean, I guess pretty much everyone got their kind of character moment. You know, like, even some of the, like, the minor characters, except for maybe like the two old ladies, like the KKK thing. I think they didn't really get a lot of fleshing out. But I think almost everyone else got at least like a little clip of an episode that was sort of focused on something they had going outside of the wrestling.
Yeah. Cherry was pretty interesting, and she seemed to have like some history with Sam that we don't quite understand yet.
Oh, I definitely get the feeling like she had spent like the past 10 years before like her character in the series doing B-list like exploitation-ish films, especially because just her knowledge of, I think she mentions it in about one sentence, a lot of the films that she's done, there's a lot of action. So she's a stunt woman as well. Mm. And I liked her. I
love the fact that she was this very no-nonsense character. And she seemed to take the whole wrestling thing very seriously from the very start. And I really... like I really appreciated that, because some of the other ones were just doing it almost as a joke, but she was like dead serious about this.
Filled with just failed relationships. As soon as her husband's introduced, and it's just so lovely and so successful and sweet, and it doesn't diminish her character at all. If that makes sense, because sometimes when they add in a partner and learn other things about the character, like, oh no, actually you're not the person I thought you were, or the character I thought you were going to be, at least. And she still stays the same fantastic character, and it's just a really lovely little light in a series that is filled with so many dark relationships.
Yeah, I agree.
Plus incest.
But she has this, she's she's
not
already,
actual incest.
She's about, also about her storyline has been set up. Her storyline for the next season has already been set up, right? Where she's gotten this great part,
yeah,
and she's gonna have to choose between that and Glow, and
right, because we can't have the same black woman on two shows. People will get confused.
Yeah, that's.
Well, I mean, like seeing a wrestler and then seeing her on another show. I mean, they'd be like, why is this wrestler on a normal show, right? No, yeah, I do think there is something to say to back then. Like Hulk Hogan couldn't have been on like, you know, a Magnum PI or something as like another character. They'd be like, wait, that's Hulk Hogan. Like I think that was kind of the way it was viewed back then. It's like people couldn't cross over from TV to movies either, you know.
It was viewed all that way until The Rock became Dwayne Johnson. Even when he did The Scorpion King, it's like, why is The Rock doing a movie? I mean, it's happened in the past.
Wrestlers can act is what the thing was, and he could not act to start off, let's be honest. It took him a while to develop.
About Cherry, I think it's so there are two things that are also mentioned in this show, I mean a little bit more than mentioned, which are miscarriage and abortion, and I think it's always a good thing that these subjects are mentioned in the show, and that it's part of the story, and it's showed, it's talked about, and it's not a taboo. And I think, it's another thing that the show does well, and important moments, I think.
You go, Mikal.
Oh, no, I was just gonna say, like, I totally agree with you. I kept expecting the second shoe to drop on the miscarriage thing. Because I felt like we established that and then didn't really have an emotional payoff. Like I wouldn't say I'm mad at it or anything. I just kind of expected there to be like a little bit more resolution there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we didn't really hear about it again, right?
Yeah, I'm just kind of used as that like awful, you know, whatever awful scene, and then.
But in a sense, it's also a point that it can be part of the story without being her whole storyline. Like, she's a character, she's a whole character, there's this in her life, but it's not all that we hear about her. So it's not really resolved, but it's not the whole thing about her, which is good.
You're right. That's a good point, too.
Just with the... We started talking more about
the miscarriage, but I definitely agree. I think it's, even when it's something that happens within people's lives, it's often something that is unresolved, because there is no real resolution to a miscarriage, ever. Can't really finish that sentence properly. But at least with the abortion thing, you know, this is set just over 10 years after Roe vs. Wade, so I found that fascinating as well. It's just, especially seeing it's a topic that is, I think, quite dear to many American women's hearts at the moment.
Yeah, I appreciated the fact that there was no melodrama attached to the abortion. She just, she found out she was pregnant, she made a decision, and then she went through with it. I feel like in every other show, we have to go through her entire, like, obviously there is going to be some emotional fallout with an abortion, but, you know, it's usually made into this huge thing that a character cannot get beyond, but she is very, like, she makes a very realistic decision to get this abortion, and which is fine. Like, not everyone is going to have the same reaction, and I feel like we've seen, like, the other side of it way too many times, and this was very refreshing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, and I also, I mean, I appreciated that it wasn't, like, it was matter-of-fact, but it wasn't casual, you know? Like, you could tell there was still emotions going on. Like, she, it wasn't, like, an easy decision, but it was the right decision for her.
I think it wasn't something she wanted to do, it was something she knew she needed to do, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Like, it wasn't cavalier or anything, and I mean, people can have cavalier abortions, that's their right, but, like, I think I felt the most sympathetic toward Ruth at that point, like, and maybe that brings up, like, some of the problems that I had with Ruth. I'm not on a, like, this is badly written, but just to say, like, this character's driving me crazy, because, like, she drove me crazy a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, Ruth kind of, she thinks she's the best one there. You know, and, like, I appreciate that.
Oh, when she delivers the monologue. Oh
my God. And, like, they're very careful in the first, you know, like, episode or two. Like, when, to stage, you know, her sleeping with Debbie's husband as a really deliberate choice, you know, like, she, like, you could, we as an audience, maybe not Debbie, but we as an audience could forgive her if, like, it was just like, hey, I was really drunk and in a bad place, I made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. You know, we see her thought process in the scene where she does sleep with him again, and it is not flattering, by any means. And, like, she kind of is in this sort of, like, I don't know if I would call it a defensive crouch, but she's kind of in that, like, push forward no matter what mode, you know, during the whole thing, which is a good part of her character, because obviously she's extremely tenacious and wants to be an actress more than she, like, wants to eat. But, yeah, I found, like, there were a couple of points where I was like, Ruth, you are a real piece of shit. You're an awful, awful person.
Yeah. She's also a very awkward character. Like, even when she's during the whole audition process, uh-huh. Like, she just she messes up again and again and again, and it's really awkward. But she somehow still manages to get through. But it was,
yeah, because it's kind of like what's going on in her head is not what's going on in reality. You know, like, she,
right.
And it's part of her enthusiasm for acting, obviously, but I think it's also her self-importance that she needs to feel like she is, you know, delivering her best acting, you know, when everybody else is kind of like, okay, let's learn the moves and figure it out. And, like, not that you shouldn't put effort into the acting, too. I'm not saying that, but, like, she was clearly over the top a lot of the time. And I think it comes across to me as, I don't know, she's so desperate to make it work. Like when she goes to the bar mitzvah bris thing with the with her maybe gay Russian landlord of the hotel, like,
oh yeah,
that was just, like, so, I mean, it was hilarious. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I was also like she's definitely one of those white people who can just use whatever she wants from other cultures, you know, which is a theme in the show. But, like, I was definitely like, whoa. okay, this is you. This is what you're doing.
She's just, like, such a keener, like, overall. Just, like, and that's part of what makes it awkward sometimes. She's just, like, so, like, gung-ho about everything sometimes. It's like, so not all that. But, I don't know. I think it's worth noting that, like, I think it's the last line of the finale, but where they're like, hey, that was great, and she's like, you want to go have drinks or whatever, and she's like, yeah, we're not there, you're still punished. Like, they didn't just like, okay, everything's repaired at the end, like, they're best friends.
Yeah. And the husband is I extremely really like is an extremely shitty person. He, first he sleeps with another woman.
Oh my god, he's evil, I hate him so much, oh my god!
Yeah, I mean, first he sleeps with another woman, and then he makes the choice to do it again. And, yeah, even when he's trying to get her to come back to him, even then he's being like really aggressive and trying to be in control when he should be like groveling on the floor. And even at the end, when they go to watch the performance at the hotel, he's like, this is so silly. And even then he's blind that this might be important to his wife. He's just a bad husband.
Yeah, so shut up and sit down and support your wife.
Yeah, and I hate him.
Deep love of old self-help books, and some of the stuff that he is sprouting is almost verbatim out of those kind of relationship self-help books from that time, and God, even into the 90s, and this whole very men are from Mars, women is from Venus mindset. Like, his one redeeming quality is his obvious love for his child, but he just goes about it in completely the wrong way. And when I first saw that scene, I was like, aw, the fat guy from Mad Men finally gets to fuck Alison Brie's character.
Yeah.
Because I think he propositions her in about season 5 or 6, and that's all I could think, which is weird.
He was such a nice guy on that show. Not so much here.
But he wasn't. Like, he turned into the character he's playing now. He goes from a nice guy to this cheating piece of shit. And that's, yeah, what he is. I know a lot of her things should be felt as secondhand embarrassment, but for someone who is mildly overachieving, not overachieving, overprepared, and awkward, it was so much first-hand embarrassment, because I think I've done almost everything that she's... Well, not cheated on a friend in that way, but all that kind of stuff, where, you know, the monologuing, I've done the equivalent in school and university, and possibly now with my show notes. And it was just... But I enjoyed seeing Alison Brie play against types so well. It just... Yeah. What should have been secondhand embarrassment was definitely firsthand embarrassment to me. There was a few times where I had to pause it and just go, okay, I need a break. I'm feeling too bad about memories.
Wait, you have separate show notes for this?
Just because I watched the documentary before we did this. And, yeah. No.
So where was that? Where did you find that?
It's on Netflix. It's on Australian Netflix. It's called Glow. The story of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. But yeah, 2012, Brett Whitcomby? No idea how you say his last name. But it's, yes, very good. And I've been going through and adding what characters are based on the people who were in Glow. And fun fact, Sylvester Stallone's mother played a manager on it.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. On the Wikipedia.
Hey, mom!
Then I don't worry, you're right to be prepared for podcasts. It's not a bad thing.
I will say, like, one of my favorite things randomly is just like when they're in the ring and they're really like going at it, and like then they'll just talk to each other. Like, are we getting drinks after? How are you feeling? Oh, yeah, I'm good. Like, and they're, like, trying to pull each other's heads off, you know?
Yeah, but then it's basically work for them, right? And then they just take a break, and then they're back to being friends.
Yeah, I, again, with not knowing much about wrestling, for me, it was like, wait, so they're really fighting, and they're really angry. No, they're not. They're acting. Stop it.
Yeah, it was actually kind of nice to see the kind of like the behind the scenes stuff, because when you're just watching wrestling, it seems very violent, even though you know it's not, they're not really going through with all of the moves. But it was just like kind of nice to see them just practicing them, starting from the basics. Because I've watched a lot of wrestling, I don't exactly understand all of them, how they, you know, execute all of those moves and not hurt the other person. So it was nice to see all of that.
Even with the characterization, I didn't really understand the face and heel aspect to wrestling, and I think it was GQ recently did something with John Cena, where he starts new accounts online, like John Cena's on the internet or something like that. They've done a few different ones, and one of the questions he answers is, when is John Cena going to turn heel, which means become a bad guy?
Yeah.
And he says, well, it happened about 6 years ago. Every time I walk out there, it's just a wall of booze. So you just missed it, but it's nice to know that you still like me. And you don't realize that when watching wrestling that there are some characters that as soon as they go out, they're booed, and that's part of the enjoyment that, you know, fan and audience interaction.
Like, even their fans will boo them, like, because they're like, you know, that's my guy, boo!
Yeah.
Wrestling, yeah, I think that is... I've never been to a wrestling match or anything.
But yeah, that is one of the greater... Yeah, but that is like one of the great aspects of wrestling, where whether it's a good character or a bad one, the audience is very involved, and the wrestlers in the, even when they're inside the ring, they're reacting very much to what the audience is doing, which is a lot of fun to watch. I don't know what it's like being there.
And my other experience with wrestling is the Futurama episode where Bender gets to turn heel at one point and he becomes the General Bender. Which makes that episode even funnier now that I understand a lot more of what's happening.
I enjoy, like, the growing friendship aspect of it a lot. Like, I was kind of nervous that it would be... Because they don't... Most of these people don't particularly like each other in the beginning, which is fine. They just met, you know. But I was really happy. Like, when Britannica does her stupid song, and, like, it's the dumbest possible thing, but they all get up and, like, sing it with her. You know, I was like, yeah, these are grown women, but they're figuring out ways to kind of be... Well, most of them are grown women. Figuring out ways to be, like, to support each other, even though it's not, I guess, what it would... look like in a lot of other contexts.
Yeah. I think Dana
like
might
Sheila's
know.
Birthday.
Yeah, Sheila's birthday. Yeah.
Dana might know more about this, but didn't each of the ladies have their own like rap song? Like
yeah,
the original.
They mentioned something.
The original Glow Ladies.
Yeah. If you watch the documentary, they show you some of them. And they show you the one where they're all rapping together. And it's really. Bizarre, but they said on the documentary it was kind of on the back of the Chicago Cubs doing a rap, and it was the start of this weird thing in the 80s
that
and early
sense.
90s of sports teams having their own rap.
Oh dear.
The Super Bowl shuffle, yeah.
I mean, the Mets did have a theme song at one point, but...
I mean, the only thing I knew about rap and sport is that Space Jam had an amazing soundtrack. I didn't realize that were raps.
Space
Jam. Athletes did. Yeah, Space Jam.
I really enjoyed some of the unlikely friendships. I think Carmen and Sebastian's friendship was really sweet, where they just kind of bonded after she had that panic attack. Mm-hmm. It was so sweet. And there were a few others in there too. And it was just great seeing all these very different women come together and form these bonds.
Oh, the Bash and Carmen scene, you were just like, how do these two people have anything in common when it comes to their parents? Because he kind of says to her, he's like, oh, I totally get it. And then you meet his mother, and oh my god, I was almost needing Valium after dealing with that woman. And just that was just watching her, and she was terrible.
Yeah.
I feel like we should talk about Sheila for a second.
Yeah, Sheila.
The human embodiment of those wolf shirts from the 80s.
Did anyone else kind of, like, actually freak out when she started painting her teeth yellow with nail polish, though?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, that was
that,
weird.
That was really upsetting to me.
Yeah.
that is so many different kinds of toxic. I can't.
I don't know if anyone else had braces growing up, but it makes you so paranoid about your teeth, and especially teeth staining, because you can get braces stain that's quite permanent. But I still have nightmares about having stained teeth or having my teeth fall out. And as soon as that started, I wanted to run from the room screaming. It's everything that could go wrong in my life in someone putting what looks like nail polish on their teeth.
But yeah, wouldn't it be so annoying just having something on your teeth all the time?
I mean,
Tudor women used to paint their teeth black, and it was common in both China and Japan.
I mean, I think also
hundreds of years ago.
She was such an interesting character in that, like, it was hard to, like, she was so clearly, gosh, I don't know what word to use. She had some issues, you know? I mean, I feel like you have to have some issues to think that you were spiritually a wolf, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I did appreciate that they kind of, like, were like, yeah, this isn't super normal, but, you know, it's who she is. I was like, okay, I guess I can move on, although she's poisoning herself to death.
I also really appreciated the wrestling-watching grandmother. She was great, even though she was, like, in one scene. When Debbie goes to watch that wrestling match, and she starts kind of, like, relating to it. She goes, like, oh, this is exactly like a soap opera, and I understand this, and yeah, if you watched any wrestling, it's basically a soap opera with a little fighting involved.
Which is so funny to me, and that, like, I think is another kind of point about gender that the show is making, that, like, Debbie gets a chance to be a lead and a character who is, you know, not going to be plunged into a coma just because she, you know, talks back to the producer, you know, and like, she gets the chance to, like, all of these women really have a chance to play, I mean, maybe some awful characters, but characters that they have input in to a certain extent and that they can own. And then, you know, wrestling is obviously not considered particularly highbrow entertainment, but I would still say that people tolerate it more than they tolerate soap operas, you know? So I felt that was really interesting to see her go from, like, oh, she's famous because she's a soap opera star, but she's just a soap opera star, you know, to, like, well, she's in this low rent, you know, whatever, wrestling show, but it's actually better on a like, fulfilling level.
Which, again, just shows probably the inherent sexism of you're doing something for women's entertainment, and it's a soap opera, and therefore, you know, so lowbrow, but it's doing something that is seen as men's entertainment, even though it's lowbrow, is still better than doing a soap opera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but soap operas, they also turn out, like, twice a day, right?
I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I don't have any particularly high opinion of soap operas, but, like, I think it was an interesting point that, like, Debbie was able to find something in wrestling that she wasn't able to find, like, really wasn't able to find, because she had a pretty story, you know. And I mean, I personally view that as tied into her husband, because it seemed very much like, I mean, they basically say, like, she was, like, the really hot girl on set, and he was like, I want to marry you, blah, blah, blah. And, like, this guy who just kind of expected to have everything delivered to him, and then once it stopped being fun and started being normal, he, like, went looking for something else. And I felt like that was a big part of Debbie's arc in, like, realizing that that had happened to her and that it was connected to her soap opera experience and, like, that wrestling could be her way out of that. I found that a really interesting kind of empowerment arc.
But the taking the medals was wrong. That poor Viking girl. She's like, but then my medals.
Oh,
I know.
I literally won this gold medal in the Olympics.
Yeah, it's like, that's literally mine. It's hers.
Yeah, but no one's going to buy that. You're not hot enough. Yeah, I mean, and certainly I think it's very, like, I think it's very interesting how
Debbie does also play in, obviously, call it the her side of the hierarchy of, because she is and busty and does get preferential treatment. Explicitly preferential, not even pretending that it's not preferential. They're like, no, Debbie gets this because she's the hottest. And I found that also really interesting. Of people like Carmen who are not, you know, conventionally attractive, who it doesn't seem to bother. Like, a lot of the women really kind of had already sort of typecast themselves, you know, and I think that was maybe part of Ruth's journey herself. Like, she had not typecast herself. She was going for the big roles and the big starring parts, and then it being Debbie and just needing a job so badly, like, kind of taught her how to do that, which is, I guess, both a good thing and a bad thing.
And a few other things, like, it was some of just the really little things that they added in that Debbie said or did, which is, like, you know, I had a child, you know, 6 months ago, but someone, like, and her massive breasts, but they point out that, like, she's been breastfeeding, and holy hell, how much must it hurt to not only be breastfeeding, but doing something that physically active? There was so many times when I was watching that, like, watching the show, and I was
oh
like,
my God.
I need them in sports bras, like, very, very, like, almost high-necked sports bras, because how are their boobs moving like that? Ow. Oh my goodness, the pain.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. And just, but imagine wearing a sports bra while you're still breastfeeding.
Shut up, Adam.
Do a sport without supportive underwear. It's the same thing. Certain things shouldn't move. Be that free to
I don't go anywhere without my Under Armour. Hashtag Under Armour. Use code VOK at underarmour.com. Can we talk about one thing that I think we've missed? The world, like, Marc Maron's character, the world of his, like, cinematic history and how it culminates in, like, Back to the Future. And, like, he had an idea kind of similar. I was like, did not see that coming. Yeah, man, you saw a movie about where someone goes back in time and almost sleeps with his mother. Yeah, man, it's great. Just came out. Like, what? He's like, damn it. Now, his is more overt that, you know, he's traveling, to the future because his mom is too sexy and accidentally travels to the past. It's like, oh, man. His movies just sound like the best and the worst at the same time.
Really messed up.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I'd pass too, actually.
I feel like you would find them in a 3 or 4 DVD set in a bin in a shopping
center. In the 50-cent bin in the swap meet. Yeah.
Do we want to go through some of the other characters besides Liberty Bell and Sawyer? Like, a bit better, just because I had notes.
Oh, yeah. Anything you want to discuss?
Because I really, really want to discuss Carmen. She's the best.
Oh, yeah, I love Carmen. She's probably my favorite.
It's her brothers and her relationship, and it's so good. I have quite a, like, lots of male friends, but I'm not very tomboyish. But because of that, you end up knowing more, and you just get the feeling that she spent her entire life watching her brothers do things and training with them and understanding how to do it. And she finally gets her chance, and it's almost dashed. I just loved it to bits.
Yeah. I love the very emotional scene at the end where she's in the ring and she's kind of having, like, the beginnings of a panic attack, and her father is the one who starts cheering for her. It's just, I know, it's very cliched, but it was so sweet. I loved it.
Yeah. It's like her own, not happy ending, but that's what we wanted for her, and it's, yeah, heartwarming.
Yeah, exactly. It's acceptance, right? That's what she wanted most.
Yeah.
But I love that her brothers were totally, like, matter of fact about it. Like, if this is what she wants to do, that's fine. That was fine with them. They were even willing to train her friends, which is really sweet.
She's based on
woman named Emily Doll, who played Mount Fiji, and Emily qualified for the Olympics, I think, twice in shot put, and she was 5'11" and 350 pounds, and she talks about she got cast in Glow because they saw her and just pretty much said two sentences to her and then flew to Las Vegas, where instead of being in LA, a lot of the Glow stuff happened in Las Vegas. Anyway, and apparently from what the other wrestlers were saying about Emily, it's almost exactly how they decided to write Carmen as well. Just this very lovely, very gentle woman who was so helpful that even when she was hitting you, it was feather light, but she made it look believable. And for the fans, they just couldn't pick it unless they were kids. And she was just so endearingly sweet to her fans, especially when they were younger.
In the show, at the beginning, it's everyone else has to go through all these auditions, and even when she's getting kicked out, all she has to say who her dad is, and she gets in because there's another wrestler in the room, and he kind of idolizes her dad, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah, the amount of nepotism that's in wrestling is bizarre. I mean, The Rock got into it because his dad was a wrestler in the 70s. There's quite a few actual brothers and cousins, uncles, and
they're like whole.
Yeah, but that's anything where you have like gatekeepers,
like that's
right?
Anything, yeah, but I shouldn't say nepotism. It's dynasties of wrestlers. It's apparently it's very common in Mexican wrestling. The proper name for it, the one where they wear the masks.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what it's called.
What do you mean, like luchador?
That's the word. That's exactly the word.
Yeah, like the Mexican wrestling where, like, you don't ever see anyone. It's all very flamboyant and very interesting. It's the masks. I don't know what's up with the masks. I do know that Jack Black
what's
did
up
a movie.
With the what's up with the masks, man?
I don't know. I guess because then, like, anyone could be, like, a famous luchador, right? Because, like, it doesn't matter what you look like.
I also have something about, like, who the actual welfare queen was, because of the, like, episode 260 on the dollop, but Josh Levin at Slate wrote a really good article, and it points out, like, just how horrifically racist the 80s was, because Linda Taylor was one of the names that she went by, why she's characterized as an African-American woman, her father, who's a Southern man, was kind of okay with her conning and grifting, but the thing that he could never forgive her for was presenting herself as a person of color. So, God, a white woman doing that and getting away with it, and then by the mid-80s, them just using an African-American woman and calling her the welfare queen is so horrible, I cannot get my head around it. But that level of casual racism, that still happens quite a lot, I feel, sometimes. It was just bizarre. I really didn't know how to take it at all. And I didn't know if it was common in America, or if people... Did any of you know the welfare queen story at all beforehand, or had heard of it? Because I hadn't. Yeah,
I just knew it from the dollop. Like, I mean, I like, it was kind of like a myth or whatever, but I didn't, like, the actual origins of it I didn't know until that episode.
Yeah, because it made me pause watching Glow and spend about an hour looking into it, because it's just such a bizarre story. But then, even more bizarre is kind of how Reagan spun it to his benefit.
Yeah, and we'll have this, yeah, how it just kind of took a life of its own, and even to this day, it's like, people on welfare driving Escalades and living in mansions. And they're like, okay, sure, right, find one. You can't, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I wonder if they'll go into more in the next season. You know, like, if they'll start to poke at those tropes more and like, I don't know, make us feel a little bit better. I don't know.
I do like how they were quite unflinching in the way that they showed the 80s and just how much it sucked for so many different types of people, because I don't know, it was only 30 years ago, but it's
so different now, and what we're aware of is so different. It kind of makes me very happy that I live now instead of back then. Oh, the ridiculous drug use!
Oh
was
my
the
80s god, yes.
Like that in the US? Is that just a trope? I guess rich people could have a robot with a drug panel, but Sam spends the entire time with, like, you know, nostrils crusted with cocaine.
Yes, drug robot.
Yeah, but seriously, I mean, how are you even remotely functioning with all those drugs in your system? How is that possible?
You build up a tolerance. I mean, not from personal experience or anything.
Sleeping pills to... Yeah, and then you have different drugs for different things.
A friend of my brother's, like, in, you know, when I was younger, in college and stuff, like, he would just drink, like, half a bottle of vodka before noon. Like, he was just constantly drunk, like, literally all the time. And he drove and held down a job, and, you know, he just seemed very chill most of the time. And, like, I think people with drugs, it kind of, you know, it takes more and more to get you high. I mean, there are patients at the hospital, and they come in and they tell you exactly how much they need of this painkiller or that painkiller. It's like, you know what's going on. They know their drug doses too well, like, and the kind of doses they take would, like, you know, kill a horse. Some of these people.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that there was a lot of drugs in that robot, and not many people.
Well, obviously, you got to be stocked for an impromptu party, right?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for season 2 when they all get up on steroids.
You need a wide
like
variety.
Gladiators.
Wait, American Gladiators were on steroids?
Oh
my gosh. So much steroid use.
Not naive. Mikhail didn't know they were acting. Come on.
Don't bring me into this. Wasn't there a wrestler who murdered his wife and son or something?
Just...
And like...
I was just trying to remember his name. I was literally going to mention that.
Yeah, I don't remember
that.
His name. It was on a podcast I was too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just going to mention that. I think they finally came to the conclusion that it might have been the steroids that actually caused brain damage. And he was kind of depressed. And he had, like, a lot of other mental issues because of those drugs. What was his name? I can't remember his name. Chris?
Chris Benoit.
Yes. That's him. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that people don't still, but people did really, really messed up things to their bodies back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got to question, football players with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Like, how much that must affect wrestlers as well, and so many other sports people. I mean, they've seen it in people who play. Soccer or European football, and that's just from hitting the ball, and we've seen it in people as young as the late teens. So the amount of damage that wrestlers do to their bodies and their brains is
measurable,
I guess.
This is another topic, but I think that we are kind of still very much in the dark ages of the way we treat, you know, I don't know, like, sports players, and they're, because, like, we all kind of buy into the idea, like, okay, you're an athlete, so you're going to destroy your body, like, we all get that, but we didn't get that it was also your brain, and we're still very much kind of, like, in denial about that as a society, I think, and not willing to, you know, deal with it and break down, like, okay, why do we pursue these sports, and why do we, you know... Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we even doing?
Well, you know, a few of us sacrifice themselves as gladiators so we can watch football on Sunday.
I was literally talking about this with somebody, and she was like, yeah, no, they're American gladiators, and, like, you know, I mean, the problem is, like, they're not taken care of or anything? Like, they're not...
Well, it's,
like,
they've come a long way, though, I think. I think that's really changing. Like, with the lawsuit the NFL had and stuff recently, and, like, they're constantly redesigning helmets and changing rules, and I think the game's going to go away because they're just making it boring to watch eventually, because they're making it safer. Like, and then I think it's either they choose safety or they choose entertainment.
Well, and also, I mean, the huge industry of it, it's very hard to dismantle when people are making millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, they have monuments built to themselves in these cities, right? Like, that take up, you know, square mileage. So I will just say this documentary that she mentioned looks great. I have one prediction for next season,
and I don't think this spoilers. I do think that the grandmothers slash KKK will turn into glam rock wrestlers.
Ooh. Yeah, because they're not actually old. They're pretty young. They just act like old 80s, right?
Yeah, and you can't really sell that for too long. You know, they have to be able to fight, right?
Yeah, because they were really annoying.
Oh, so annoying.
Yeah.
Oh, I had the other How adorable was Justine's crush on the pizza boy? And then Arthur was just down in a pizza. And she was just like, I've sorted it for you. I'm going to go study elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yes. And the whole, the awkwardness of it was very endearing.
Yeah.
And then he makes fun of her dad's movies and she's like, no, nuh-uh. Cross the line.
Deal breaker.
No, see, at the time we thought that he was making fun of her future lovers movies.
Yeah. What did you think of the end, actually? Like, because there's this whole scene with Debbie and Ruth, and then Sam changes it, and there's another fight at the end, and everything changes, and I don't know, that was, I felt, yeah.
I thought that was necessary? I thought that was a very practical decision. To get the audience to come back. I mean, because this is like the first episode of their show, right? That's what they're recording. Yeah. And they need to have something. It's like creating a cliffhanger, right? Something to bring the audience back to the next episode. That's all it was.
Right. And they did give them like this formulaic ending, like, ooh, America triumphs with this. And they were like, yeah, that's a real high. And like, so the audience was like, oh, this is cool. But then, yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, next time, you know, tune in. So, you know, obviously you can't leave it like that.
I was just as surprised as Ruth and Debbie, like, what the?
Yeah, same.
So, yeah, they played it
Yeah, well. I think it worked really well because nobody knew what was about to happen. And the reactions are very real.
Yeah, Debbie seems really put out. Like, what the, like, hey, I'm the star, what's going on? Like, I think Ruth gets it, but
yeah,
I did kind of think that when she and Ruth had that discussion at the car, something else might have been going on. I was like, I feel like we're gonna see this conversation from a different angle, which we didn't, but we saw what they were actually talking about.
Yeah, it took me a while to click that Ruth and Debbie had kind of planned to have her in the audience and not that she just put her costume on underneath just in hopes that she had a chance to jump on stage.
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah, like,
she that's just what, for a so second bad. I was like, wait. She's got her costume. How does this work?
And I really liked that last words. I like that there's a little bit of a resolution, but, you know, Debbie doesn't hate Ruth as much anymore, but they're not best friends yet and might never be, and I really liked that. It was not so much of a downer ending, but enough to, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she says, we're not there. Does she say we're not there yet? Or does she, I forget what she says, but it's, I don't know, it does imply, like, well, we're going on the right track a little bit. Like, you know, we're kind of back. But I also, like, was it earlier in that episode or the episode before where she's like, you know, I hate that you've made it so that, like, I can't just have a normal conversation with you anymore. Like, that just, yeah, that was, like, a heartbreaking moment.
Yeah, what do you think a future with her husband would be? Like, she's finally found something. Debbie has finally found something for herself where she can, you know, something that she can be proud of. And her husband is, he just thinks it's all silly. Do you think she'd be willing to go back to him after this? Like, and she did agree to test it out again. Do you think he'd have a chance after this? I hope not.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hate him.
I
was, like, really close to throwing stuff at the screen.
Well, I think if they didn't have a child, it'd be like, yeah, definitely not. But people do a lot for children. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, but if one parent is not respecting...
very successful co-parents, but not together. Like, yeah.
No. Yeah, is it really in the child's best interest if one parent does not respect the other one?
Well, that's the whole the whole thing about divorce, right? But so obviously the question is a good question, but it's tough to answer. But also, I wondered during the show, like, what the fuck is this child seeing? Like, it's so surreal, the whole wrestling thing. And Debbie is, like, carrying him around everywhere. And you have to wonder, like, Sheila the She-Wolf and the KKK, and you're like, come on, really? I mean, I'm not sure he's...
But to use my special moves, these, but... baby beatdown.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. But then he mostly sees the behind the scenes action, right? He doesn't actually see all of them in costume, yeah, other than Sheila.
Yeah, but still, like, she
is
takes him
costume?
To the motel at
that's
some point,
not a, that's
right?
Not a costume, really. It's more of a persona, but, yeah.
Maybe she'll get help.
Maybe she doesn't need help.
She starts eating people, you never know.
One of the things I really liked is pretty early on you find out why Debbie was cut from the soap opera, but it's not until I think the last episode where she turns around to her husband and she's like, you didn't like me doing the soap opera, you don't like me doing this. And I wonder how much her partner's disrespect of her job at the soap opera kind of made her fight for better storylines, and that led to her being cut as well.
Yeah, I think that was definitely one of the reasons why she did it. Probably the reason she did it.
And maybe the kid will grow up and they'll drop his name and we'll realize like he's a person who currently wrestles.
It's John Cena!
Yeah.
But that would be kind of cool. I'd like that.
I don't really know anyone in wrestling. Like, I've never really watched wrestling, but, like, I knew, like, growing up as a kid, you knew, like, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, and, like, there was, like, video games and stuff. And, like, I know, like, The Rock and John Cena.
Come on.
And
Undertaker, Steve Austin.
Triple H? Yeah.
Yes, Stone Cold.
Oh, Steve Austin, right? Steve Austin was kind of more recent. Like, are they
really not
are
a French
still
thing.
Wrestling? Like, I don't know.
Most of them are still wrestling, I think, even though they're old.
My son always tries to lay down the people's elbow on me. That's like that's the one thing I know. And he somehow learned that. And just like slamming with my elbow. He's like, people's elbow. I'm like, oh no. You don't even know what that means, Charlie.
Ooh, I used
eventually
to...
they get so old, they just become Vince McMahon and Ric Flair, and they end up being managers.
The Undertaker is still.
What was that? What was that movie
the Undertaker
with,
still like fighting? He's like ancient.
He's like 70.
Yeah.
I felt like he was 70 in the '90s.
Yeah, I know. He seems super old. Like when I remember seeing him. Did I think he went through like name changes or something? But I don't know. What was the movie with David Arquette?
The Undertaker.
And,
The Undertaker's only 52.
What was that?
What? 52?
Really?
That's not possible.
He was born in, like, 1965. Yeah, March 24th, 1965. He is 52.
They must have, like, his makeup and stuff must have aged him up, like, in the 90s. Because he looked, like, super old.
Yeah, eyeliner and premature and balding has worked to his benefit.
But I've been watching him since, like, I was born. That's not possible. He can't be only 52.
I mean, if you put like a thin layer of PVA glue on your face and then scrunch it up, it looks like you have wrinkles. Maybe they've been doing that to him for 20 years.
Where do you even pull that from, Dana?
That's
I'm just
sometimes
like, oh,
I
happen to know if you take a thin layer, like, when?
Sometimes I get bored when I'm doing craft projects. Don't judge.
Oh, no judgment. No judgment. I'm
yes,
full of useless
really
facts.
Was.
So I'm just
no,
different
no.
useless I, facts, that's all.
I
he really was
who
born
have
in
done
1965.
Some film makeup stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
I just have
okay.
friends who've done some film makeup and it's like an easy way of doing it. Sorry.
Okay, so I just realized that he did start wrestling the year I was born, so I was right.
So that's your guy right there. He's been wrestling your entire life.
Yep.
Literally.
You are his OG, yeah. Nadia.
Thank you all for joining us. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, on the Podcast of Ice and Fire forums, and you can always find us on our website, vokpodcast.wordpress.com.